This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life.
Thank God.
Thank God.
What would I do without you?
You have so much of your life that needs managing.
I do. You know what? There's never been a truer statement. You're going to manage me?
I couldn't. I could not keep up with you. You have more energy than the Energizer Bunny.
Thank God for my vitamin drips.
You kind of look like the Energizer Bunny.
Thank you. I've always wanted fur. Puffy little cheeks. I've wanted fur. I've wanted a fluffy tail.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought humans would be great if we had big squirrel tails. Because just thinking, walking down the street and when girls get cold, they can just wrap themselves with their tail or, you know.
Never thought that in my entire existence. That's Carrie Kasem. She's right here live. Haven't seen you for a while, Carrie.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
I've been traveling. I was in Toronto. I was in Hawaii. And now I'm back here. Just got in last night and had a trial a couple days. Well, when was it? A day ago? So confused.
You know, when you travel, 2 days. Yeah, two days ago.
When you travel so much, you just cannot seem to keep the time straight.
It's true. And I have to say, the last few days, not only my boyfriend, but myself, we kept thinking it was Wednesday. We kept thinking Thursday, and we're like, wait a second, it's the weekend.
It goes by quickly. And we have a show that'll go by quickly. That's one thing that everyone comes into the studio and they go, oh, what am I going to talk about? What am I going to talk about? And then within 2 seconds, it's over. And they said, how did that go by so quickly?
That's true.
It just happens, especially with our first guest, because I know that he is no stranger to a microphone. And Carrie, you better not tell him how to talk into a microphone, because he's been doing it for over 25 years. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Chuck in a moment. But I do want to tease the second half of the show, which is with Howard Wasserman. And he's been on the show before. He's a professor of law at Florida International University College of Law. And he's here to talk about his new book, The Infield Fly Rule is in Effect, The History and Strategy of Baseball's Most Infamous Rule. It is bizarre. He's going to talk about baseball and how it affects the law, comedy, all kinds of things that go into this book, The Infield Fly Rule. So if you're a baseball fan or a legal fan, you don't want to miss it. And Wayman is sitting by waiting to play some really cool baseball music.
Hit us, Wayman. Makes me want to go get a big fat veggie dog.
This is baseball music. Well, not quite.
This is like Carney's.
You are not tricking our first guest, Chuck White, who is the voice of UCLA basketball and football. Has done 25 Rose Bowls at least.
Wow.
Public address announcer. He's got a historic amount of sporting events that he's done. He's done other games as well, national championship, college football games, a Rose Bowl, college basketball, March Madness. He's done Clipper games. And of course, he's the voice of the popular interactive game, EA Sports NCAA Football.
Wow, Alan, thank you.
That's quite
That's
a
awesome,
voice.
Man.
I'm not finished yet, Chuck.
He's going to read your entire resume. Yeah,
thing,
he's
right
going to read everything.
We
right.
won't even need to hear his voice because I'm just going to tell everything about him. He was a championship golfer at UCLA, of course. Everything is UCLA, even
it
his
is.
Golf.
And PGA Tour.
That's
well,
true.
Yes,
That's absolutely
yes.
true. Thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome,
his
Chuck.
His golf shoes have UCLA on them. He golfed with Corey Pavin and Duffy Waldorf, amongst others.
True.
And of course, was it Tom Tom Watson's record at Stanford?
I did break Tom Watson's record. Yes, that was pretty cool, man.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah, awesome. And I got to play with Allen. I played golf with Allen. That was so cool.
That is not an honor.
Wait, how did that happen?
We have no idea.
I don't know.
How did that happen?
Did you just happen to be in a foursome? You're like, just, they put you in?
Something like that. We were in a tournament. It was a lawyers tournament, Steven Spindell Memorial Tournament, and we were put together in a foursome.
So cool.
So it was. You guys really did.
And guess who the winners? Yeah, exactly.
Chuck led us to victory.
Well, Alan, you hit a couple 300-yard tee shots straight as an arrow.
There was
That's
another
true.
Good golfer, Forrest Blake, who with Chuck really had a great golf round.
So you guys won?
Yes, we won.
Wasn't that cool?
That's really awesome.
Yeah, I've never won anything
in golf. What was your score?
How many under par were we? Like every hole we birdied.
Because it's so best.
Cool. Come on.
I'm not kidding.
What did they have you? Like right? Like in the women? Were you playing up at the women's tee?
No. Back tees, man. It
really?
Was awesome. Yeah, totally. Yeah, Allen was sensational.
No,
sank putts left and right.
So, no, they play best ball.
He didn't bogey everything?
They didn't. They didn't use my balls. They used his. Well, it's true.
Yes.
Anyway, Chuck, welcome to Gervie's
Thank
Law. It's
you,
an
Alan.
Honor to have you with this great, great background in sports. You're also the senior vice president of Beneficial State Bank.
Yes, I am. Very self-important here.
Serious
banker.
And I'm sure a lot of people like to ask you questions about banking, but we're going to start by asking you some questions about UCLA. And
awesome.
By the way, speaking of golf, I saw a picture of you. I think it was from 1978, and you were the spitting image of a young Jack Nicklaus.
Well, thank
golfing.
You. Yes, I had hair then, Alan, which
look
was
at this.
Tremendous.
My God.
And
he does look like Jack. That's not. Is that? Come here. Let me
thank
see
you.
This.
This is extremely dated material,
Wait,
Carrie. Here,
is that really?
But
is that really him?
That is me. Yeah, absolutely.
You do look like Jack Nicklaus. Like no joke. The haircut
just,
perfectly.
Thank you.
Kind
yeah,
of a little Dorothy Hamill-ish, but that's okay.
Well, exactly. Dorothy Hamill was,
Totally
also
in.
A very good skater.
Yes.
I mean, she was sensational.
There you go.
But
no, you really do look like Jack Nicklaus. That's very funny.
Okay,
thank
before
you.
Before we go any further, Chuck, we're going to put you to work here because
yes.
we do want to talk about UCLA sports. There's some new developments with Mick Cronin becoming
you
the
bet.
New coach of the UCLA basketball team, and we can get your opinion on Chip Kelly and how that's going to go. A big season coming up for Chip and
right.
the UCLA Bruins in their rebuilding program. Before we get to that, in order for you to be on this program, for us to do the show, I need to have an introduction, and Carrie needs to have an introduction, because this is something, as everyone
yes.
can hear, what a voice, and Carrie will use her introduction.
We're going to use it to open the show every
oh,
single
boy.
Time, so
or
it better
will,
be good, Chuck.
Or will
oh,
you,
boy.
You'll use it in one of your marketing ploys, whatever, on your website. Or
marketing ploy.
Is it a marketing ploy?
It's my scheme.
You're a master. There's
Sorry.
No one better than Carrie Kasem. So I'm filibustering a little bit here
yes.
to give you an idea so that
well, you
can
bet.
Do it. Okay, so I'm going to be running on the field in the Rose Bowl. I'm number
yes.
eight. I'm quarterback.
Yes.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. At quarterback for your UCLA Bruins, ladies and gentlemen, Alan Gervie. There
Come
he is.
On.
Ladies
hey,
and gentlemen,
Wayman.
There he is right there. There he is.
Where's the applause, Wayman?
Yes.
There we go.
Thank
there
you.
We go, Wayman.
Thank you very much.
Okay. That doesn't sound like a football stadium. It sounds like an opera house or something.
It does.
Isn't it?
It is.
All
okay,
right, now,
I want
exactly.
one. I want a good one.
What
yeah.
position are you going to play, Carrie?
At running back.
No. I want to get
tight end. Tight end.
I am tight end.
Well, you do. You have a tight end.
I'm going to be the punter.
Oh, very good.
I'll be the punter.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, in punt formation, presenting at 5'11", 126 pounds, dripping wet, here she is, ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Carrie Kasem.
Wow.
Yeah, there she is. It's incredible. 53 yards on the punt. End over end. Fair catch called for by Kasem.
It's so good.
Thank you.
I want people, if they need to get a face for this voice, you've been in several movies.
Yes.
And I do remember you. You Swingers, and there was a movie, I don't know if it was Swingers or Sling Blade, possibly Scream, but you've been in some really big movies, and your face is very recognizable.
Well, thank you very much.
Very recognizable. Because I walked in, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's very,
yes.
you know, life is strange in L.A. I'm an Angeleno.
Yeah.
And it takes you on some strange adventures. And this is one of the adventures of getting into film. And, you know, for some reason, people like this face. I once played an FBI agent in an Oliver Stone film,
Which
all
one?
Sorts of stuff. What is it? The one about World Trade Center.
World Trade Center.
Yeah, with Nicolas Cage
and Michael Pena.
That's right.
Yeah, that's cool. It's very cool. I mean, just all sorts of weird stuff pops up in our world in L.A.
Do people always say, I know you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Get a lot of that.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I know
absolutely.
You. I know
so
you.
I've
like,
seen
yeah,
you,
you don't really,
somewhere.
Yeah, you don't know me, but yeah.
You know what I love is when people hear him speak and they say, wow, you got a great voice. You should do announcing.
Yeah, well, exactly. Correct.
And you're like, have you ever been to the Rose Bowl? Have you heard my voice? Have you been to Pauley Pavilion?
Exactly. Or the thing I get, interactive games. Like, kids play interactive games.
Yeah.
And in the early days of Electronic Arts, EA Sports, they were putting out this game, College Football, NCAA Football.
Yeah.
And they were looking for an announcer. And they said, Chuck, do you want to do this thing? I said, sure. And I still get requests. Chuck, how do I get into the dynamic mode? How do I go to the next level in the game? I have no clue. Absolutely zero. It's like, I'm just the voice. You know, second down and five, ball on the 35-yard line.
Do you repeatedly do that, tape it, or did you do it once?
Repeatedly.
So every year?
It was insane.
So you're like on the cover of EA Sports every year.
Well, it's kind of a religious thing. But the script is like 3 inches thick.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We actually have to look at every single option available into a game. It's unbelievable. And then voice matching to each play. It's pretty complex.
And does it change every year? Do you have different players that you're...
No.
It's exactly the same.
No, we get the same thing. So the stuff is in the can, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. So, I mean, the game itself has been going on forever. When we first did it, nobody knew about it. It's like, what is an interactive game? And we recorded in Santa Monica. And I remember the day fondly because I check in and Isabella Rossellini is in front of me. It's like, oh my goodness gracious.
No, wait, when was this?
This was like 1997.
When she was the face of, like, what was it, Dior, Estee Lauder.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm just the lowly PA announcer. And I walk into this office and it's like, there she is. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And how I recognized her, I just looked down and there are these purple shoes. And I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. I'm signing in at the front desk. And
you were looking at her shoes?
Yeah, well, what the heck? I'm signing in, Alan. Okay. I mean, what the heck? What else am I going to do? So, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's, oh boy. And there she is.
Wow. She's a beautiful woman.
Incredible.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. And she's very kind. She just lit up and she says, hello, Chuck, or something. Because she saw my name. I was like, wow, oh my gosh, I got to remember this one.
So, Chuck, you seem to be impressed by her. Are you impressed by other people? I mean, you're in the sports world.
Yes.
So you're rubbing shoulders some of the greatest.
Weird.
You know what I should say? Some athletes that become great athletes. Because a lot of times.
Or other announcers.
Correct.
No.
True.
Yes,
you're right, Carol.
Yes.
You're right.
Yeah, who?
Vince Scully?
Yes, the great Vince
Scully. Have you met Vince Scully?
Oh, many times. Yeah,
oh, really?
He's an amazing guy. He's a southpaw golfer, left-handed golfer, and a very, very good golfer.
Have you golfed with him?
I never have,
okay.
but I've met him on the putting green before playing, and he goes off and playing. But, you know, if I'm looking at people who I really love, this Monday, I just happened to be at a golf thing, and I was fortunate to meet Brooks Koepka.
Oh,
you in the golfing world.
I saw the picture. What was that tweeted out of you and Brooks?
Yes, it's like,
and you said he was the greatest.
Star, this guy.
Now, did you say that he was the greatest golfer right now just because you were with him? Or were you sucking up to him? Or you really believe so?
But, you know, that's another story. But, you know, he is the dude, man. If you've won 2 U.S. Opens, a Masters, second place in the Masters, the PGA Championship, this guy's unbelievable.
What do you think of Tiger's comeback?
It's incredible.
It's unbelievable.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, it doesn't make sense, and I love that.
Yeah, totally. 40-something years old, coming back from all the injuries, all the travail that's gone on.
Yeah.
It's everything we love as Americans. I really believe that. Yeah. You know, that we just love that.
The comeback story.
He's able to overcome all of these obstacles and barriers, perhaps that he created not created.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And there he is.
And Carrie, you're not offended by any of his past activities?
Oh, no. I don't think he's, you know, I don't know him anymore. Look, he could have changed. The man could be a new man. I don't know. I always give people second and third chance. People always.
Exactly.
You know, we're not perfect beings,
yeah,
right?
True.
I know I've made tons of mistakes. He did it very publicly, and he did it a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully things have changed with him. I hope he's happy, and I hope that, you know, maybe he lives a little bit more of an ethical life. But I'm very happy. It was a very cool comeback.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah, a strange story, Alan, on Tiger. Back in 79, when I was playing at UCLA, Corey Pavin was my teammate, and we were going down to San Diego for a golf tournament. We stopped at a driving range in Orange County. And we went and hit some balls. The 405 freeway was jammed. There was nothing going on. You know, so we said, well, we just will just go hit some golf balls. So we go to this range and we look at this at the end of the range, and there's this little kid hitting golf balls, and his dad is standing behind him. And we start laughing. Corey and I start laughing and going, you've got to be kidding me. A five-year-old kid here hitting golf balls. It was Tiger.
It was Tiger.
Wow.
Had no idea.
And you didn't know?
No clue.
So
no clue.
How did you put two and two together after
It was pretty easy to see that it was Earl behind him.
Right, watching him.
You know, very seriously, very stoically. But it was so cool to see a young Tiger Woods and just hitting it beautifully. Very thin little kid, but beautiful swing. But we thought the whole thing was so crazy. A five-year-old kid, 6 years old, hitting balls? Really? Whoa, what the heck? That's the way it was.
Now
it's kind of commonplace.
Totally. You know? You start early, very early.
All right, we've got to take a break. We could talk about Tiger for a while, but I just want everyone to know that we have history here on Gervie's Law today because we've had a lot of people associated with UCLA on the show, and Chuck White has just eclipsed all of them. And that, and notably, that includes LeVar Ball, who was one of the best guests
we had. That was crazy.
Yeah, when LeVar was on the show. And he is associated in some degree with UCLA. And then, of course, we've had Professors Adam Winkler, Professor Volokh, Professor Fink, all of the law school, UCLA law schools. But today, it's Chuck White all day, all the time.
24-7.
Chuck White. You're no LeVar Ball, Chuck.
Yes,
But we're enjoying it, nevertheless.
Yeah,
you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. There we go. Chuck White, have you ever heard this song before?
A couple times. Bruins, Alan.
Just a
go
couple
Bruins.
Times. So for those of you who are just joining us, Chuck White is a public address announcer and the voice of the UCLA basketball and football teams. The Bruins, been doing it for 25 years, have called a number of amazing games. I wish we had all day to talk about some of those memorable games, but this is a law show,
yes,
Chuck.
Yes, it is law.
I don't want to get
serious law.
I don't want to get into the sports. but tell me, during the break, we were talking about LeVar Ball, who I'd mentioned. You said he's a nice guy. He used to come by and talk to you when you're sitting at the booth.
Yeah, you know, LeVar, I'm always flabbergasted when I see him, you know, doing these strange things, because from my UCLA experience, he was very quiet and he was very astute about the game. He studied the game. He loved watching his son every game. He was at Pauley.
Lonzo.
The big Lonzo and Big Baller Brand and the whole thing going. But we really knew that things were really going wild when dozens and dozens of students were lining up to get a selfie with LeVar. It was like out of control.
Wow. Really?
And the whole Lonzo thing was just wild. You know, it was showtime. Kind of a mini showtime for UCLA.
For UCLA.
Was it
more so than John Wooden, for instance?
I would think so, yes.
That's a sad commentary.
Wow.
Yeah. John Wooden was incredible. You know, a total different deal going.
Of course.
Know? And
let's hope.
He was coach, man. He was the coach. And a very simple man. He was there every game. And still we have an empty seat behind the bench. I don't know if you know this.
For him?
At Pauley, for him.
Yeah.
And it's a gold seat, and it's right there. And he's always there with us. We just kind of think coach is there.
If UCLA's
cool
team continues on its path, you might want to sell that because they probably need the revenue.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
That
okay.
wasn't a nice comment.
Okay.
Did you get to know John at all?
Yes. In fact, in my younger days, he actually invited our entire golf team to listen to him talk about the pyramid of success.
Wow.
This was very cool. So we sat for 2.5 hours listening to Coach talk about the pyramid of success. We had no idea what he was talking about.
Really?
It was so,
do you have any idea what he's talking about?
No.
I do, because
absolutely.
I gave Brian Kramer, one of the associates in my office, who's a big John Wooden fan, a big picture with the Pyramid of Success on it, which I love. And what is your take from the Pyramid of Success?
Well, it obviously worked.
Exactly, Carrie. You know, it's truth. It's just very simple truth on how to be the best you can be. Not only on the basketball court, but in life, and how to be a good ethical person. And Coach really walked the walk. He was the guy. It wasn't about money. It never was about money with Coach. It was about becoming a better person, being more intelligent, having greater knowledge. Very simple things, kind of Midwestern thought, but very cool stuff.
Now, fast forwarding to 2019, UCLA hires a new coach after an exhaustive search where there were a lot of controversies about who they were going to hire and whether one of the coaches turned, turned them down or couldn't get out of his contract, for instance. But it's Mick Cronin. How do you see it? Because he was the coach, University of Cincinnati.
Yes.
Went to, what, 9 straight NCAA tournaments, never got past the Sweet 16, which is something he's going to need to do with UCLA to be successful because of all the pressure that apparently is on the coach. How do you see him playing out in terms of recruiting, in terms of putting team together? I think he'll probably take a different tack than perhaps the past coaches have.
No question. I personally, as a fan, I am so excited about Mick. I think this is the correct hire for UCLA. You know, the world is his oyster right here in L.A. What he did at Cincinnati, if you know Cincinnati basketball, they were struggling when he arrived there.
Yeah.
And he cleaned that thing up and got that thing going. And I love the way he coaches. He's very tenacious, very fierce, and gets to it. And he likes to win. And there's nothing wrong with winning. You know, it's like it's okay to win. Let's win some ball games and have some fun.
So
that's how you have fun, by the way.
Speaking of winning, I got to ask you this, Chuck, because I know you have an opinion on this. Does he proceed with a one and done type strategy, or looking at players like he had at Cincinnati that, you know, hang around for a few years and become seniors and mesh together as a team?
It's a great question, Ellen. You know, I mean, I'm just a PA announcer, but what I can say, I'm a draft guy, but no, I really believe that this one and done thing is crazy, and it's actually doing a disservice to the young players there who need to grow up a little bit. You know, they're getting into these large bodies and they need to get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. And why wouldn't you enjoy the time playing college basketball while you're learning the game, learning all facets of the game?
Right.
And it's so sad to see them leaving and it's like it's an empty cabinet. But I think that's going to change. I think that's going to change inevitably. You know, I hope for the best, because college basketball, I believe, is the most exciting. It's just wild. You know, it's so exciting to watch. You know, it's just very emotional game.
What's the most exciting thing you've seen? What's the most exciting call you've made?
Well, you know, it's not a UCLA game, actually. It's a USC game. I announced the USC-Texas game, football, at the Rose Bowl
in
2006.
Well.
And some say the greatest college football game ever played. Unbelievable. Yeah. Watching Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and Vince Young.
He
was a man playing amongst kids. He just took the game and just went, well, here I go. I'm just going to take it. Literally, Alan, Carrie, it was like watching the stadium come off its foundation. It was like surreal watching what was going on. And people who were there, they know.
SC or Texas. It was talked about so much.
Totally.
And I'm not a big college football person, but I heard about that game. And that's where you knew Reggie Bush. That's where you knew everybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to know some of these players that are in the NFL, because of that game.
Wow.
Yeah. Which
so
is
cool.
Crazy.
And you called
so
that
you
game.
Called
I did.
That.
I did. Yeah.
That's
it was
awesome.
So cool.
That's
I mean,
awesome.
It was just surreal. Yeah. The whole thing was incredible.
With all due respect, Chuck, I do disagree with your analysis of the one and done, because I think it's more.
Yes, sir.
I'm now the lawyer comes
out.
Yes. I think maybe it's something that ought to be done. But when you look at the success of some of the teams this year, when you look at Duke, even though it didn't have the ultimate success, I mean, that's the epitome of one and done.
No question.
It seems like they're going to continue down that path. And to be able to compete with the other teams, UCLA may have to look at some of these, like, players who are off the charts going into the NBA in 2 years.
Well, you know, perhaps so. You know, it's mixed team.
Wow, and that was so easy. I wish you were a judge.
Well,
the judges do not have my arguments like he just
In favor
did.
Of Mr. Gervey. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, drive safely. Good evening. Thank you.
Let's turn to football really quickly. Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
Wow. What a job he has to do to bring UCLA back to where it should be. And what do you think is going to happen? I mean, is he washed up, or do you think that he's got a plan and it's just got to be put in place?
Well, what I look at when I hear that are statistics. I like to see stats, and I like to see what's real and what's really going on. Under Coach Mora, we suffered from penalties, and lots of mistakes. The team was making a lot of errors, unforced errors, like you'd say in tennis, but totally cleaned up last year. People don't notice this, but it's a big deal. So suddenly there's a certain form of control and discipline being put in. And I like that. I like to see that. We know Chip's got to have time to put his system in, his players in, and get it rotating. It takes a little bit of time. It's a whole different deal. But he knows how to coach. There's no question in my mind. Coach Kelly is a good, good football coach.
Yeah. But what about recruiting? I mean, in college, it's all about recruiting. And Jim Mora, you know, he was brought in to do some recruiting.
True. True.
Can Chip Kelly do that, even though I agree with you, he knows how to coach.
Yeah. You know, if you look at him historically, other than Mariota and some of the other great players he had at Oregon, he recruited 3- and 4-star players. He was not always recruiting the 5-star guys, and he made those 3s and 4s stronger and better and more united as a team. And that's what we're looking forward to at UCLA. It's more of a UCLA play. You know, we like the team play where, you know, it's all coordinated and it works beautifully. It's like ballet or something. It just plays perfectly.
Wow, what a homer he is.
I'm a total homer, man. I drank the Kool-Aid a long time ago.
Are you going to stick around as long as Vin Scully did?
I hope so. I love it so much. It's a passion, you know, just going and watching games, and especially college athletes. You know, it's not as jaded. There's, of course, you know, the pro game is unbelievable, and I've done many pro games.
Yeah.
It's cool. You know, as you know, guys know, it's the greatest of the great. But it's a little cold, too. Mm. It's a little, you know, mechanical pro thing.
You have fun with it.
Yes.
I mean, that's the one thing that I know a lot of UCLA fans really enjoy.
Thank you.
Is the personality that you put it. Because if you had to be the announcer for the Dodgers, for instance, you could never do that.
It, you know, well.
Batting third, second baseman.
I think the voice of the Dodgers.
Lopes.
Yeah, he does a great job. Yeah. But there's not enough time. There's not enough air and space to do that,
right,
as you know. But in basketball and football, we got plenty of time. Yeah. You know, let's go. Let's spread it out. And it's almost like if you enjoy sound, which I really do, and I know you guys do too, I always like the wall of sound, the idea of a wall of sound. And if you hear that, it's like that's part of the whole experience,
right,
whether it's the voice of the PA announcer or whether it's the voice of the music, the whole thing. You just kind of take it in on a sensory basis. It's really cool.
You know, and at halftime, you have some time to have some fun.
Totally.
Tell us about the guy who goes to USC or how you slam them at halftime. a basket.
We started a thing, a super shot contest many years ago, and you have to make 3 or 4 baskets. You win a car or something. It's incredible. Kids win these cars. It's unbelievable.
Oh, wow.
And I've given that responsibility to a game show host now who goes out and does the gig. But in the day, we always refer to them as the lowly Trojan All-Star who can't even make a layup. He gets absolutely nothing.
All right, I got to turn it around a little, pause, because we do have some USC fans who listen to the show. We only have a minute left.
Very adequate school.
Very adequate school.
Tell us the great work that you're doing at Beneficial State Bank.
Oh, my gosh. I love this bank, Ellen. You know, it was started by Tom Steyer and Cat Taylor about 10, 11 years ago in Oakland. And the whole idea is to bank those with the least bargaining power. And we're located in East Los Angeles, and I just love doing it. You know, we're all of our profits, our net profits of the bank, go to a nonprofit foundation, and then we push the money back out into the society in the form of help.
That's awesome.
Which is really cool. Never been done before, really, on a large scale.
Is your nonprofit something that is picked every year, or is it the same one?
Same nonprofit. It's Tom Steyer and Cat Taylor's nonprofit.
Okay.
And usually we will help our clients, whether they're nonprofits themselves here in L.A., San Francisco, Portland, Oregon. We're in Oregon as well as Washington State. So it's really never been done before. It's really kind of cool.
That
I love
is
it.
Awesome.
Very, very cool. We got to take a quick break. After the break, we're going to welcome to the show Howard Wasserman, professor of law. There's a legal connection there at Florida International University College of Law to talk about his baseball book. Imagine that.
Fantastic.
But he's a law professor. It's okay. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
No BS. Constitutionally guaranteed. AM 790 KABC.
Need a new perspective on law and life? Call Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
You gotta have heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the
Can I just sit and listen
start.
To this?
It's you can.
It motivates
you
me.
We'd probably lose a few people.
No. You know, I didn't even want to finish this show. But now that I hear this song, I feel like I just have to have heart.
So ridiculous.
I can get through it. I can do it. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects right now. And it's not law.
No.
Baseball. My life of baseball, and it's so thrilling to have with us now a professor of law talking about baseball and law, of course. He's been on our show before. Howard Wasserman is professor of law at Florida International University College of Law, and he had a great book called Understanding Civil Rights Litigation. It came out in 2013, I think 2018 as well. But this is the book that I'm really excited about. Just came out a couple months ago. Infield Fly Rule is in effect. The history and strategy of baseball's most infamous rule. It's published by McFarland and Company. Howard Wasserman, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Good to be here.
Oh.
Where are you?
I'm facing the south in Miami.
Oh, can you get to a better place?
Because, we can't even hear you. It sounds like there's an infield. I'm going to have to call the infield fly rule. You're going to be out in a minute. Let me see.
Is that a little better?
Oh, there you are.
Howard Wasserman. Wait, Chuck White.
Yes, hello, Howard. This is Chuck White, the voice of UCLA, the Bruins. Nice to meet you, Professor.
Nice to meet you.
Now we can hear you.
Sorry about that. I was on a Bluetooth.
Oh, that's okay. You're doing great now. It's really important that we can hear you because a lot of people want to hear about this new book that you have called Infield Fly Rules in Effect. It's interesting because I saw a Wikipedia article on the common law origins of the infield fly rule, and it talked about an article by William Stevens published in 1975, the University of Pennsylvania Law Review, that has become such an intriguing part of the law. How do the two mesh?
And real quick, can I just, for people that don't know what this rule is, can you give them a little history on it?
Sure. So what the infield fly rule says is that, or what it generally means is that when the batting team has runners on first and second, or the base is loaded with less than two out, and the batter hits a fair fly ball that is playable by an infielder with ordinary effort that can easily be caught by an infielder, the batter is called out, regardless of whether the fielder catches the ball. And then the base runners can run at their own risk. So if the ball is not caught, they are free to advance, but it's no longer a forced play. And the rule has been around since, in one form or another, since the early to mid-1890s. And the purpose behind the rule is to keep the defense, or to take away the opportunity for the defense to intentionally not catch that batted ball and get a double play on the two base runners.
You have to add why it's such an easy double play if you were to drop the ball. Because, of course, if you catch the ball and you're off the bag and you throw it to the bag, it's going to be a double play. So people are going to hold up as soon as it's popped up in the infield. The runners are going to go back to their bases. It would be a real easy double, if not triple play, if you drop the ball because you could throw it.
That makes sense because the runner has to run from home plate to first, so that would force the other two runners to go and you'd get them out.
I'm just wondering, exactly. Professor, what's the problem with that? I mean, why wouldn't you allow that? I mean, who cares?
Chuck,
wouldn't it speed up the game?
You're saying, why did you write a book on
that? Oh, that's right. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
So the idea there were two things. The 1890 explanation was it seemed like a cheap double play. It was unsporting to make a play like that. The argument that I've developed is basically that we want a certain amount of equity, a certain amount of fairness within a play, within any one given play. And we don't want game situations in baseball or in any other sport where one team can intentionally do the opposite of what we usually expect and get an overwhelming and inequitable advantage. So the expected play in this situation is the infielder catches the ball. That's what we expect fielders to do, is to catch a batted ball. And this is a situation where if the infielder doesn't do that, if the infielder intentionally doesn't catch the ball, they're going to be significantly better off than they would be if they caught it. Because if they catch the ball, they get one out. If they don't catch the ball, if the infielder doesn't catch the ball, they get two, maybe three outs. And it's a situation that the offensive team is powerless to counter for the reason that you just described, that the base runners have to stay close to their base. They can't lead too far. So then if the ball isn't caught, they've got too far to run. There's no way they're going to beat the throws to the next base to beat the double play. Right. And if they try to cheat and take off early, the infielder will then just catch the ball and double them off at their at their previous base. So they're kind of stuck. There's nothing they can do. There was a 1911 newspaper article talking about it and said the base runners were up a tree. Is how they describe it in the early 20th century. And that's basically the idea. So what the rule does is it takes away that opportunity for that inequitable double play, because the batter never becomes a runner because he's out on the call, and then the base runners are not forced. They can't run, and every so often you'll see a double play because a base runner will do something stupid, but it's no longer a forced play, and the batting team rather now has some control over the play.
So if you have a batter that's going up and the bases are loaded or there's two people on the base and you have somebody that's not necessarily good, maybe it's the pitcher who's hitting, I don't know which league that is, and sorry, and they're not good. Can they purposely hit a fly ball? Is it easy enough to do that?
No.
So somebody that couldn't come in behind him and kind of clean it up.
No, it's a pretty tough. Usually, when it happens, is that a player gets fooled on a pitch and either gets jammed and hits it off his fist, catches it off the end of the bat.
Howard, let's be honest about this. I used to play a lot of ball, and if that happened to me, the thing I would do after popping it up would be slam my bat at home plate, because I missed some incredible opportunities for some ribbies.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Go ahead, Chuck.
So, well, what is the definition of infield here? Now, how far does it go out? Does it just go out to the dirt, the end of the dirt there in the infield? Or if one guy's foot is in the outfield and one is in the dirt?
Good question.
What is the deal, man? I don't know, man.
It's a lawyer's question.
This is Gervie on the Law, man. I'm just saying, right?
So the rule actually is a misnomer. It should not be called the infield fly rule. It should be called the infielder fly rule. Because what the rule says is the ball has to be playable by an infielder with ordinary effort. It has to be an easy play for the average infielder. So that means the ball could go pretty far into the outfield. And there's a commentary to the rule that is explicit that the umpire should not be guided by artificial lines like the foul lines or the infield grass or the outfield grass or the infield dirt. So the ball could go pretty far out into the outfield. And in fact, the play that everybody remembers, the recent infield fly play that everybody remembers, and frankly, the one that got me started on this project 7 years ago, was the infield fly call in the 2012 National League wildcard game between the Braves and the Cardinals. And the infield fly was called on a ball that was hit pretty far out into the outfield. And was not caught because the fielders miscommunicated, but the umpire invoked the rule, so the base runners advanced as they can, but the batter was called out. And for people who don't really understand the rule, it seemed like a ludicrous call. How can you call infield fly on a ball that's hit that far into the outfield? And the Braves fans started throwing stuff on the field, and it delayed the game by about 20 minutes.
So how do you stop that? Like, where is it? It's just the umps like, hey, I'm going to call this rule right now just because I feel like it.
Yeah.
Work?
It's the umpire's judgment on what is playable, by ordinary effort. And they look for certain signs, notably whether the infielder has stopped running and is settled under the ball and is waiting for it to come down.
Okay.
And you can tell that by watching the fielder. And that sort of fits very well, because when the fielder's set is when he has a chance to, if the rule wasn't there, to intentionally not catch it and sort of manipulate the play. The umpires also are guided by whether explicitly or not, they are somewhat guided by the purpose of the rule, and that everybody recognizes the purpose is to eliminate that double play. So in a lot of cases, the umpire will take into account, well, okay, if the infielder, is this ball hit so far into the outfield that if the infielder didn't catch it, could he get, would he not be able to get a double play? Is it too far away that there's no way they could get a double play on multiple base runners? And if it's that far into the outfield that a double play is impossible, then the umpire will not invoke.
Yeah.
Taking the purpose of the rule. Of
right.
The rule,
it's kind of a subjective call, though.
It
right?
is subjective, yeah. And the umpires have to make it.
Subjective.
That's true.
Well, not everything. Mm-hmm. If you hit the ball out of the park, it's not subjective. It's over the fence, it's a home run. But, you know, the umpires do have to make the call like a fair catch. People have to know, the players have to know what's going on, and that's what's happening. We're talking to Howard Wasserman, professor of law at Florida International University College of Law, and his new book, Infield Fly Rule, is in effect. It's gotten some really great reviews, Howard. Mitchell Berman from the University of Pennsylvania Law School said, in this thoroughly researched and rigorously reasoned ode to the infield fly rule, Howard Wasserman demonstrates in clear and inviting prose that careful attention to this one seemingly oddball rule can illuminate deep truths about baseball, about people, about sport, and perhaps even about law. A fascinating read. Tell us, Howard, about people, sport, and perhaps even law, and how it impacts this book, Infield Fly Rule.
William Stevens' article back in the day, and that was an example of kind of turning a legal eye and an eye of legal analysis to a baseball rule. And that was sort of what I was trying to do here. I was very interested following that play in 2012. There were a lot of people not only criticizing the play, but criticizing the infield fly rule in general and calling for its repeal. So I wanted to try to put together a defense of the rule, and that's what set me down this path. And one of the things that I was responding to was a lot of people who argued, well, why do we have the play in this situation in baseball when we don't, or why do we have a rule in this situation in baseball when we don't for all these other situations in baseball? Why do we have a rule for this situation in baseball when we don't have a rule for similar situations in other sports? Mm-hmm. So what I set out to do was try to come up with a framework that explained what it was about the infield fly situation that justified this rule, and then to look at other situations in baseball and in other sports to think about, okay, are these situations similar to the infield fly rule or the infield fly situation, or are they different? And if they are the same, do they have a special rule? And if they're not, in what way are they different? And I looked not only at a whole lot of situations in baseball, but I looked at a number of other sports, basketball and football and track and field, and just looked at some of the rules in a lot of those sports.
Professor, how would that go in basketball, for example? What would be the infield or fly rule in basketball? That's an interesting.
The one that everybody's pointed to, the one I addressed in the book that a lot of people had pointed to was rules governing intentional fouling. Is intentional fouling just like intentionally not catching a fly ball?
Right.
And ultimately I concluded, no, it's not, because it's not truly a comparable situation. And the difference is there's a counter to the intentional foul. If the other team fouls you, the counter is make your free throws and you're not really put at a disadvantage.
Sounds fair.
Where in baseball, the base runners don't have that advantage. The situation that was suggested to me, unfortunately, after the book came out, and I hadn't thought of this myself, was flopping, both in basketball and in soccer. So pretending to get fouled or pretending to get run over to try to fool the referee. That actually would be a comparable situation, because like the infield fly, you're pretending to get fouled is not what you ordinarily want to do, and there's nothing that a team can do to counter that play. The thing about flopping is we haven't yet come up with a rule that would stop flopping in the same way that the infield fly rule stops infielders from intentionally
hockey, they get a penalty. So if you're going to flop, you're sitting in the sin bin.
Well, I think there's a whole answer to all this, gentlemen, here. I think there really is, because since the late 1800s, baseball has always been called a gentleman's game. You don't hear that with basketball. Mm. You do not hear that with hockey, and you do not hear that with the NFL at all. So, good point. Me, there are gentleman rules, and this seems like one of them. That's just my theory. Maybe I should write the book. You know,
Howard.
Yeah, the thing is, I think that was the 1890s explanation that a lot of people came up with. The thing is, everybody kind of knows that it was nonsense. There was nothing gentlemanly about baseball.
No,
Ty Cobb, spikes into the guy. Yeah, what is that?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Everybody was drunk and having fights underneath the stands. You know, it's never been, and the game has always been about deception. We sort of welcome deception in the game. We encourage deception in the game. And so the argument was, if the infield fly rule is about preventing deception, well, then it really doesn't work. If it's about sportsmanship, it really doesn't work. And that's where I was sort of, that was the angle that I was sort of coming from. There's got to be some other explanation.
You know, Howard, so interesting. I wish we could talk about this for another hour
because
it's one of my favorite subjects. And like I said, the reviews have been great. It's called Infield Fly Rules in Effect, the History and Strategy of Baseball's Most Infamous Rule. You can get it on Amazon, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and all booksellers, I don't know if people go to bookstores anymore. I do, but...
I love them.
A great read for baseball fans and for just fans of life. Howard Wasserman, I want to thank you for being on our show again. We always enjoy having you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, take care. Wow.
Yes.
Harry.
Yes.
Chuck.
That was so cool.
I told you that the hour was going to go by
like
so quickly.
That. Just like that.
I feel like we were just introducing Chuck and he was saying, I'm here.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
The snack bar is open. That's correct.
I'm going to get, you know, first of all, before I say, you know, thank you for being here. It's been really a pleasure. And I'm sure if I'm not here someday, Chuck will be happy. As he came into the studio, he sat in my chair.
Is that true?
No, I did not.
He does this to me all the time.
Wait a second.
I had
Chuck,
a guilt trip,
you
man.
You did take a step toward my chair.
Oh, that's true.
And then it was like when
in
I came
error.
In, the ball went up
it's
in the air.
PA announcer,
and I said, infield fly rule, don't move. Stay
right.
In your
you
base.
Said, that's true.
You know, as
right.
LeVar Ball
stay in your
said,
lane. Stay in your lane. Lane. That's
I'm telling
correct.
You, stay
you
at
said
your,
that, man. You
stay
did.
At your base. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. So much,
we appreciate
Thank you,
all
Thank
of
you.
It. It's been fun. I would like you to take us out because, you know, usually I'm just fumbling around. I'm using sports terms here. I fumble the ball when we're trying to say goodbye because we only have like 30 seconds left. And I say, Carrie, oh, yeah, it's been great. We'll see you next week.
I try and catch it. I try.
You try.
Try.
You try, but then you just keep going. So let's do it properly.
Yes.
Chuck White, the voice of UCLA, basketball, football, EA Sports, golfer extraordinaire, is going to say goodbye to everyone from Gervie's Law.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Carrie and Alan, thank you, drive safely, and good evening.
I love it.
Show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.